Good morning, church. Well, it's so awesome to be with you this morning. And I think that they have a picture for us ready this morning, because this week on Thursday, yes, there we are. This week on Thursday, we had our first girls' night out and we went for a jawl, and some of you missed out on it. So we took a photo so that you would be jealous and have a sense of missing out, so that next time you come with us, I mean, we had the best time. And as you can see, Milk Boss ladies were rocking it, weren't we? Was it good? No, you were, yeah. Well, this morning, wasn't that just beautiful? And to have a child blessing this morning, and to see a family come together, is so special to have families up here. And I just want to say, if no one else tells you today, well done, Mom. Well done, Mom. And sometimes we just need someone to say, well done, Mom. And if you're sitting next to a mom, won't you just turn to her and say, well done. Well done, Mom. I need to hear that too. And it's so special to, as a church, be able to pray for family. There you go. Well done, moms. To pray together with them as a family. And you know that God put us in families, right? That's His idea, and that was His intention. And He places such a value on families. And it says, I want to read to you a verse. It says in the Bible, in Psalm 68, verse 6, He puts the lonely in families. And I love that verse because it shows us that He doesn't want anyone to be lonely. He doesn't want anyone to be left out, right? He puts the lonely in families. And if you're like me, then somewhere along the line, you've definitely thought to yourself, God, the family that you've placed me in, like, what were you thinking? Like, seriously, they're quirky, they're weird, and I know you put them with me, but God, what were you thinking? Is there anyone out there? Quirky, strange, weird families. And just having moved to Melkbos in the last 2 months, I've had the funniest experience where a number of people would come to me, and as they're introducing me to their families, just before, they'd be like, now, let me just explain to you before you meet them about my dad. Let me just explain to you, like, he's going through a stage, and just excuse their weirdness. And we all do that. We want to, like, prepare people before they meet our families, don't we? Just so that you know, like, that they're not exactly normal. And I feel like we all do that. Just excuse their strangeness. But as they say, everyone is normal until you get to know them. And I want to encourage you that we all have weird families, every single one of us, all of them. And that's God's plan, isn't it? That's His plan. And then when we come into God's kingdom, He gives us another family, right? Family number 0.2, and that's the church. And they're equally strange, and they're equally flawed and not perfect, but they're the family that He's put us into, because He doesn't want anyone to be left out, to be lonely. Thank you, God, for families. And this is something that we believe in as a church, that God wants us to pass on our faith and to pass on our belief to the younger generation in this family, right? That's what we believe as a church. This is something that Jesus actually showed us through His life. He didn't just teach about it, but through His entire life, He shows us how He values the younger generation. And that's what I want to speak to you about this morning. And we're going to have a look at Mark 10. We actually mentioned it this morning. We're all, like, connected, yeah. In Mark 10, verse 13 to 16, this is what we're going to have a look at. It's the story where people and families bring their children, they bring their young ones to Jesus so that He can bless them and He can lay their hands on them, just like we've seen this morning, right? And we read the same story in Matthew 19. And the nice thing there is that if you read the previous chapters, you see the build-up into what's happening. And Jesus has been teaching them this whole time about the value of children and the value of family. And He says to them, you have to become like a child, guys. You have to be humble and teachable. And you have to believe like children believe. And the funny thing was that the disciples, they didn't really catch it at the time. They didn't get it. They were more worried about who's in charge. They actually asked him, who's going to be the greatest? They were worried about who's going to be the main man. And Jesus had told them that he was going to die. And so they wanted to know, hey, who's going to be the captain of our team when Jesus is gone? It must be one of us. And he says to them, no. He picks up a child off of the ground. He's showing them, like we need some practical imagery sometimes. He picks up a child and he says to them, you have to become like a child. But they don't get it. And so he teaches them again, if anyone causes a child who believes in me to stumble, it would be better to, and then he goes on and on to describe the gruesome kind of death and torture that it would be better to experience than to let a child stumble. And guys, it was seriously gruesome. He's talking about like burning out your eyes and like cutting off arms and tying a huge stone around your neck and drowning. That would be better than to let a child go astray. In other words, you have to be careful of how you treat them and what you teach them, guys. They are so precious. This is what Jesus is saying, his words. They're so precious that God actually has angels who watch over them, who will testify against those who let children stumble. That's how important it is. Quite scary, hey? They are watching us. Angels are watching us to see that we get this right. But even after that, the disciples still don't get it. Talk about slow learners. They just don't see the value. So Jesus graciously goes on to teach them a third lesson. He says that this is not God's will for even one to be lost. And he tells that story about the 99 sheep, right? He will leave the 99 and go after the one that goes astray. And we hear that a lot, but he's talking about our children, right? That's how valuable they are, that a shepherd would go after that one. He was talking about our kids. And it's at this point, after all of this teaching, that we find Mark chapter 10, verse 13 to 16, right? We got the whole backstory. And I've asked Tristan to come and read it to us this morning. Brave face on, girl. There you go.
The people brought children to Jesus, hoping he might touch them. The disciples shooed them off, but Jesus was irate and let them know it. Don't push these children away. Don't ever get between them and me. These children are at the very center of life in the kingdom. Mark this. Unless you accept God's kingdom in the simplicity of a child, you'll never get in. Then gathering the children up in his arms, he laid his hands of blessing on them.
Oh, good job. Well done, Tristan. Thank you. All right. Thank you so much. Didn't she do great? There you go. Tristan is in grade 7, and she is going back to a program outside for grade 7s. And at that bye, Tristan. If there are any other grade 7s who would like to join her for a special grade 7 program outside at the tent, you're welcome to join her now. Cutie pie. Okay. Well, after all of those lessons and hearing Jesus spell it out pretty plainly, right? You would think they got it now, like they've got it. Yeah. This is the last straw. Jesus was irate. He was seriously angry, and he let them know it. He was expressing, don't you get between them and me. If you want to live a kingdom life, right? We're doing kingdom life. If you want to live a kingdom life, understand that they are at the center of it, right? They are valuable now, not later, now. They can have my kingdom now. And there's something that we can learn from them. He's expressing to them that they're open and they have a receptiveness that we need to have as well as adults. And we got to learn how to receive things like they receive things. We always kind of try to earn our way, right? Whenever you get something for free, you're like, like the strings attached, like, you know, got to do something for it. But children understand that it's for free. And he prays for the children at that point, not because they've earned it or they've done anything right, but just because he loves them and he wants to bless them. Kids get that. Kids get stuff is for free. It's us that don't really get it. And he wanted us to see the value in them and the potential in them. And we can see that Jesus really cares about our attitude towards children. We're supposed to bring them to him. Not ignore them or put them to one side. It's our job to bring them to him. Isn't that awesome? That we get to play a role in bringing children to Jesus, every one of us. So if it's your niece or your nephew, your grandchild, or the crazy little boy that lives next door, it's our job to help bring them to Jesus. We get to be part of that. And in preparing for today, I asked God, God, what is it that you want to show us about young people, about the next generation? And I had such a clear picture in my mind that I feel God gave me of a tree, a huge, huge tree that was planted in dark black soil right next to a beautiful river. And this tree was so heavy, almost hanging to the ground, full and full of fruit, almost weighed down by fruit. And I thought, yeah, I think that is exactly what God wants for our young people, to be planted in good soil, to be bearing fruit through their whole lives. And I think that someone prayed it just now. I think it was, yeah, good job. No, I think it was Jeremy mentioned a tree planted and bearing fruit. That's exactly the picture that I had. So I want us to turn to Jeremiah 17, verse 7 to 8 this morning. There's the tree. Creepy roots. It's a bit creepy, but they're going down deep, and that's the picture that I had. Jeremiah 17, verse 7 to 8 says, "But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like trees planted by the water that sends out roots by the stream. It doesn't fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit." Isn't that awesome? Isn't that the picture you want for your children, for every child in our community, for their friends and their cousins? And I noticed that it said, when heat comes and a year of drought. And those are things that are definitely coming. We can't stop those things from coming. They're coming. That's life. They'll have to face trials and temptations. They'll go through real and hard life stuff. We know that. We want to stop it, but we can't. That's life. But they can be strong trees that bear fruit through those times. That's God's promise to us. And then Jeremiah links it for us to this kind of awesome fruitful life, he says, comes from our trust and our confidence in God. That's how it happens. It says, "But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like," right? That's a powerful key. Are we teaching our young people to trust in God, to look to him in difficult times, to be confident in his power? Are we teaching them that God is good? He is good. He's not scary. He's not distant. He is good. And they can have a fruitful life with him. And I think that it's one of the most awesome privileges and responsibilities of us. Even if you're an older brother or an older sister, we have the awesome privilege of being part of that, because we get to create the environment that seed's going to grow. So it's their job to send down their roots and develop trust in God, but it's our job to create the environment that they're going to grow in, right? So I don't know if you went to school like 50 years ago or you went to school last year. I think that either way, you were probably forced to do that little project, right? Where you've got like the cotton wool. Your teacher gave you, yeah, cotton wool. And a little saucer. And then you like had to get that little bean that she would give you, like a little bean seed. And you put it in the cotton wool. And it was your job to cover it up, to water it every day, to get the prime spot on the windowsill where your bean was going to grow. Did everyone do that project? Yeah, like it's like a go-to project. And it made me think of that project, right? Where we each had the stress of like, how are we going to make this little thing grow? And the competitiveness between friends. Hey, why is mine looking so weird and fat and swollen? I gave it too much water. Why is mine looking dead? What's going on with it? Why has mine not got any roots yet? What's going on? And I'm telling you guys, that's pretty much like parenting, hey? Pretty much the same. But we can only do our part. We can only do so much. And then it's up to them to send their roots out. Right. We can create the right environment. So, the thing that I wanted to look at is, how do we actually do this? How do we create the right environment for our little seeds, our family members, to grow? That they can know God and find great purpose, right? And have a fruitful life. Well, to answer this pretty tough question, I mean, I think it's probably, like in the world, like it's probably the hardest question. Like, how do we make these little guys grow and grow right? So I thought it best to actually go and ask a few pro families who have got this right. So I did. I went out and asked people who have amazing, purpose-driven young people in their families and asked them, how did you do this? What can you share that would actually help us to make them grow? And I asked a variety of people, different cultures from different countries, and some of them who I asked are, well, they're from here. They're sitting right next to you this morning. So there's quite a large number and range of people. And this was the first thing that I found. The first thing is that we have to live it. We have to live it. 100% of them expressed that I have to live it out for them to see, right? I mean, I was hoping for like an app or like something like practical that like I can use to like help my children. But they were like, no, you have to live it. That makes sense, right? I have to model a living relationship with God for them to see. That's the only way. And young people are like sponges, right? They just suck up whatever we have. They're sponges. And if we walk around all day, if I have TB, right? This is rough, but if I have TB and I walk around all day and I say, flu, 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 I have the flu. It's just the flu. What are they going to catch? They're going to catch TB because that's what I have. And young people will catch what we have, not what we say we have or what we hope we have. They're going to catch what we have. So we have to actually demonstrate to them how to trust God. We have to demonstrate to them how to put their confidence in God. And how awesome is it that last week Dutoy spoke about not worrying and be overcome by anxiety, but trusting that God will take care of us, that he cares about the details of our life. And that's what we want young people to catch. We have to demonstrate it. Well, maybe you're sitting here this morning and thinking to yourself, do you know what? I actually don't have it all together right now. Like life is a little bit rocky and a little bit unstable, and I can't just pretend that everything's okay right now. And I wanted to really encourage us this morning that when you're going through tough stuff in life, that is the exact time where they're going to see you living it out, right? That is the time that they're going to catch it. They're going to see what you're going through, not hiding it from them. They'll see you respond to God. They'll see you in a tough time surrender to God, right? They'll see you crying out to Him, and that is what they are going to catch. It's not in the perfection. It's not in the perfect life where they see everything going smoothly. It's in the tough stuff that they're going to catch a real relationship with God. Real trust will be modeled. My own parents were far from perfect, like super, super far from perfect. They were runaway hippies. Anyone over 60? Maybe you knew them. They were runaway hippies from Woodstock in Observatory in Cape Town. This is a real story. Both of them struggled with addiction for decades. And that was just the normal that we grew up in our house. Ecstasy in the freezer, weed in the safe. That was normal. And they loved us, and they provided for us the best that they could. But eventually, within our family struggles and challenges, it ended in a very messy divorce. And I remember standing in court in my grade 8 uniform with a blue blazer, having to choose which parent I wanted to live with, like in front of them. And my younger sister and I chose who we thought actually needed our help more. Who wouldn't manage without us, right? And so we chose to live with Mom. Then for her came the years of financial struggle, trying to get by. She tried to get us through school. She tried to forgive. She tried fighting against the anger and hatred inside of her, and she often lost that fight. And I remember finding my mom standing at the kitchen sink with tears in her eyes as she was pouring a bottle of whiskey, a full bottle, down the sink, and she was fighting with everything inside of her that was keeping her bound up in that moment. So yes, we knew that Mom wasn't perfect. We knew. We couldn't hide it. We were convinced that she wasn't perfect. But we never, ever doubted her love and her trust in God. Never. We knew that was real. With every trial that she faced, she was open with God, even if she was shouting at Him. We knew it. Every temptation, we saw her leaning on Him in hard times. Every failure, she surrendered to Him, like, unashamedly. And every moment, she was trusting Him because she had to provide for us. And it was a messy and amazing and inspiring relationship with God. And that is what we caught, not in the perfection. So although you're not perfect, make sure that you love God and are trusting in Him so that they can catch that. All right? The second thing that we can do to provide this environment, to create the right conditions, is that we actually do have to share our beliefs with them, to share our faith with them. We have to. This means you've got to be sure of what you believe in. Like, you've got to be convinced of it. Make sure that you have a good foundation in your faith first so that you can pass it on. They're looking to you. You are the all-knowing one to them. I know that's scary, but you are. Research shows us that parents and family are the number one influences in our kids' life. Shocker, not their teacher, not their Sunday school teacher, not their pastor. Sorry, guys. It's you. It's their parents. It's their family. And so we cannot outsource this job to someone else. We cannot drop them at Sunday school and walk away. It's our job. And very quickly in Deuteronomy 6, verse 5 to 7, the Bible says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give to you today are to be in your heart. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up." This is for us. This is for families to do, something that we can do. And you can do it. sitting next to your husband or your wife. We can do it. You can. It's something that you can actually do. And there are so many helpful resources. There are so many things that you can, oh my gosh, keep James out of Chromebooks because we never get out of there. But there are so many resources and apps that you can use to help you to do this. But you have to do it. You have to get it done. Reading a Bible with them is an essential part of their growing up. Not just leaving them, but actually reading it to them. They learn so much at a young age when they're little from hearing stories, more than just telling them that's wrong and that's right. Don't do that, do this. No, they need to hear a story, read to them. We've got this cool Bible at home that James is reading to them at the moment. It's the Action Bible. It is the most beautifully illustrated thing I've ever seen, and they are glued. So it really does work. Just spend time reading with them. If they're bigger, maybe just sharing a verse and saying a short prayer with them in the morning before they go out. Like short, it's fine. I'm just sharing with them. As they get bigger, or they're preteens, then maybe go out and actually buy them their own Bible. It's so essential for them to have one of their own. There's some fantastic translations out there. There really are. For youth and young adults. I know, I wish I'd had one when I was growing up. But unfortunately, my granny's church in grade 7, they knew that I was going to grade 7. So they got all the grade 7s a Bible. And it was one of those black, hardcover, encyclopedia-looking Bibles, right? And I was actually too embarrassed to have it on my shelf at home. So it went in a box at the top of the cupboard where it stayed for a number of years. And when it came to the time that I surrendered my life to God and made a commitment to Him, I knew exactly where that thing was. And I knew that there is truth in there and I need to go find it. So out came that Bible. They need to have one of their own so that they have it. It's theirs. All right? Then, if you've ever been around a young person, and you've probably already discovered that they ask really hard questions, like from very young, they start asking really tough life questions, like, why can't I see God? Why does God let bad things happen to people? Oh, this is my favorite one. What happens when we die? Like, I thought we had a few years still, but we've been asked all of those questions already. They ask hard questions. And reading the Bible actually kind of stirs them to think about even more hard questions. And when they ask these questions, I want us to know that it's okay to say, I'm not sure right now. I'll get back to you. I'm going to go find out, and I will bring you the answer. It's okay to not know the answer to the question, right? So we can go and ask our friends, ask people for a good answer, but then make sure that we get back to them. Otherwise, they're going to go find the answer somewhere else. They will. But don't feel bad. Say, I'm not sure. I'll get back to you. Right? I often say to Rachel, just remind me of that question again later. Okay, and she does. Get back to them. Then keep it light. Reading and praying together. If it's a heavy and like intense situation for them, they're not going to enjoy it. And you're probably not going to enjoy it. So keep it light. Keep it fun. Okay, the last thing. The last thing that I thought of that we could do was to actually speak life and courage into our young people. And last month at our prayer and fasting evenings that we had one for specifically focused on young people, and we read these statistics, and I want to share them with you again. In Cape Town, 41% of our young people struggle with depression. 41% in Cape Town. 21% have attempted suicide in Cape Town. That's here. 21% suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, from a loss or a trauma that they've been through. And these are huge numbers. And our young people are like very aware of it because they're sitting with their friends and they're talking about it on the playground. They know it all too well. It's a huge number. And it's our job to be the other voice in their ear, to bring courage and to bring encouragement to them, to speak life. And I think that words are so underrated, like we don't use them enough. but they have such power to lift people up and to pull them out of their situation, to give them hope. Just little words like, I believe in you. Like, we would make sure that we say this every day. I believe in you. You can do this. With God next to you, there is literally nothing that you can't do. What do you want to be? You can be it. Encourage them. Give them strength. It's amazing to see how young people begin to live up to our opinion of them. Not our expectation on them, but when we have a high opinion of them, they actually start to live up to it. And we've seen this with our own children, and we've seen it with a number of children in Zambia who've been through hard, tough stuff. And just speaking life into them, they begin to live up to our opinion of them. And just as I'm ending, I wanted to share with you a story of a young boy called Isaac. He's there. Isaac is a young orphan who came to us in Zambia about 10 years ago. He was just a little guy and completely abandoned, no mom, no dad, out of a dusty little village. There he is. Hi, Isaac. And he came into our orphan home and to a completely new environment where people were dedicated to speaking life into him no matter what. All right, so people, for the first time, he started to hear, I can do stuff. I can. He started to hear, you can. And so he started to believe, I can. And this little boy, really, who had nothing but just words of encouragement, has gone on to be one of the top 4 students in his grade, now in grade 10, in the country. And he decided when he was young, he wanted to be a doctor. I said, Isaac, you can be a doctor. You can be anything. And he's lived up to that expectation, and he's literally doing it. I said, Isaac, you could be the president if you wanted to. Like, no dreaming is too big. It's limitless. And he believes it, and he's lived up to it. Are we doing that for our own children? Putting courage and strength into them. For the boy next door. For your nephews and nieces who don't get to hear at church. Are we doing that for them? These are just some of the ways that we can create a good soil, a good condition for them to grow up. It's their job to sink their roots down into it.